what it is to make it rapping. Cause it's all about some views just to get some traction. The real workers is confused cause everybody capping. As a shorty, I was never really a schemer. Got good grades, a really big dreamer. High school was cool, like the other side was greener. But the flow got nice, cause the lyrics got meaner. Then I start to think like, damn, this is the wave. Cause people say I'm the man for shit I jot on the page. 20 years later, I'm feeling a guy at my age. Staring 40 down the barrel like a nigga shot in the cage. Will I be rich or will I be broke? Can a nigga feed his family from all of these quotes? Shit, I should take home a Grammy for the shit that I wrote. Until then, it's the subway, but will it change
one day?
And someday, I wish upon a star. $4 million home and an exotic foreign car. In the city, I'm the king and they know just who I are. And my name's on the sign under God, Boulevard. Whoa, what does it take for dreams to come true? You just gotta have the courage and the will to pursue. Hard work and dedication, it's all up to you. I just gotta keep the vision going, only thing I'm wishing for.
Welcome to the Edgy Pierce Podcast. Man, I got Dr. Childs with me today, and we're going to talk about everything math. And so, Dr. Childs, for the folks that don't know you, man, intro yourself.
Hey, this is Dr. Childs, your favorite educator. I do all things mathematics, education, and a little bit of things inside and outside of education. If you don't know me, check me out on social media at Dr. K. Childs. And you can visit my website, www.christopherchilds.com. But my focus and what I do is making sure every child, not some children, not those children, not that child, every child receives a high quality educational experience by any means necessary. That's me in a nutshell. As we go through the show today, I'm going to talk a little bit more things about what I do.
That's what's up, man. I love that energy. I love that E, right? And for folks that are watching,
you got to have that E. Let me calm down. Got to have that E now.
All right. So, man, first question is, what do we need to know from those that teach math to keep students engaged? Well, so first of all, let's start with this, right? So there's this stigma towards mathematics, right? Especially when it comes down to Black kids, all kids, particularly historically marginalized kids, in terms of having this stigma towards math. Where does that come from, and how do we alleviate that as educators?
So part of this whole stigma, and I'm going to change it. We always use this marginalized piece, but at the end of the day, I want to change that to historically excluded.
Okay.
Because when we say marginalized, we always use those terms of minority, but globally, Black children are the actual majority.
100%.
So we got to first reframe it, and then that starts into why do Black children, and we say brown children also, historically don't have the same levels of achievement. Yeah. The question I want to ask all educators out there, how often do Black and brown children authentically see themselves in the educational experience? Not only through just some images on the wall, how many times do you talk about Black mathematicians? How many times are Black narratives and stories included within the curriculum materials? Or oftentimes they're an exception to what we're doing. So part of the reason children are not successful is because they don't see themselves in the experience. Perfect example. We're right now, depending upon when you're watching this episode, right now recording it in April, we just finished the college basketball championships. If you love college basketball, you can get into it. You can talk about it. But let's say you know nothing about basketball. Your thing is football. You don't have an entry point. And oftentimes we create an educational system for Black children where their thing is something else. We've created this system they have to assimilate to get into in order to even get to the math. As opposed to what are we doing to create a liberatory experience where they see themselves within the math, and then they also see how math applies to their life beyond the classroom, which when we look at the history of Black folks, and I'm going back to the continent, that's what we use mathematics and invented mathematics for, to problem solve and make sense of the world around us, not just to get some answers. So when we change mathematics to a piece where Black children see the origin and the roots of where they come from, how mathematics was used to start civilization, then we're going to see a transformation in how they perceive and engage in mathematics in their classrooms today. And we're going to talk about practically how does this happen on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah. And so if you're a math teacher, you need to be tuning in, right? Because this right
every here, math teacher.
Every math teacher in the United States, you need to be tuning into this show. We did this show just for y'all. So what do students, and based off of your experience, what do students find difficult about math?
We make it so abstract. We literally make it a subject where you have to memorize formulas, and if you don't memorize the formula or do it the way someone showed you, you can't engage within it. culturally, that's not who we are. That's a very individualistic society mindset. From a collectivist nature, we're taught to work together, to problem solve, to engage, to have conversations. And so when we think about why folks, it's not that they're struggling in math, they're struggling in the confines that we put mathematics in. For example, I'm arguing with folks every day. We're in 2023. Every child has not only a calculator in their pocket, they have a computer or access to a computer. And we're still saying you have to memorize different formulas. You have to memorize it. They will always have access to the formula. They will always have access to all this technology. Why don't we create an environment that harnesses that technology as opposed to saying, hey, school, cut off everything you know to memorize and then get in life. And people still don't know Pythagorean's theorem, which was stolen, by the way, which should be called the right triangle theorem. But people still don't know what it is either way. Why? Because we made them memorize it over time.
Well, talk to us more about right triangle theory.
So we have to understand what the right triangle theorem is. There's an article that recently came out. I need to verify a little bit more. But we have to understand when Pythagoras lived, if he actually lived, I'm not in the camp of he maybe may or did not live. But let's say he did live. Yep. During that time period, just historically, y'all, the pyramids in Africa were already built. If I'm not mistaken, there's some right triangles in what those things have been built. And if you study history, Pythagoras actually studied over in Africa. They say approximately 25 to 40 years. So if he studied in Africa, who had the best libraries at the time, they already had developed triangles and right angles. And we have documents today, like literally the pyramids to see this. You're not going to tell me he developed it. Does he get credit for it? Yes. Is it erroneously? Yes. So I try to reframe it to the right triangle theorem. And that's part of the thing when we think about this educational system. We so much focus on the Greeks, but let's use history and timelines. The Greeks were Johnny come latelys when it comes to mathematics. And if you study, your favorite Greek mathematician actually studied in Africa. So my thing is, how are we reframing this understanding? And now some are looking like, Chris, you're only going to talk about Africa? No, you have to understand with me, I talk about it from a global lens. Every culture and civilization contributed to mathematics. There's a great book up here on my shelf called The Crest of a Peacock. I highly recommend every mathematician reads it. It shows you how mathematics has evolved from every culture contributing. And in the United States today, we have so many different rich cultures, race, ethnicities in our classrooms, and we keep going through this Greek lens as opposed to how did your culture contribute? How did your culture contribute? How did your culture contribute? And we have the documents to showcase every culture contributed. Now, our job as adults to make sure every child feels seen in the mathematics experience.
Yeah. So we all about solutions here, man.
Yes.
So what advice do you have? What strategies do you have for teachers that are watching their students struggle with math?
So the first, do you even know them? Do you really know them? What? Then you're probably like, Chris, yeah, we know them. I know their name. I know. But do you know them? Because oftentimes we have to consider how we present the information. I've worked with children where some children may not like to read. And do I spend time arguing with the child, I don't want to read this, as opposed to if I give the child the task orally, they complete it. So what am I trying to fight? Also, there's some children who do better with using their hands. Think about that concrete pieces with manipulatives. Am I giving them problems that they can use manipulatives to engage in? If we're truly trying to create a student-centered environment, we're truly trying to create an equitable environment, we're truly trying to do differentiation, we're going to start meeting children where they are. So that starts off, I don't believe no child struggles. And you're like, Chris, you don't believe no child? No, I don't. I believe because I see children do amazing things outside the classroom every day that I struggle with if we're struggling. But I see what happens is we're not speaking their language and engaging them in ways that they find meaningful because we're so focused on here's an input, everybody at the same output, and we see how society is today is not working. Yeah. Provide children rich problem-solving tasks, give them the opportunity to engage, and give them an opportunity to showcase their way of engaging in mathematics. And then we build along the way, and we still don't get to the answer, y'all. But if they don't understand the process, have problem-solving skills, what does the answer matter?
Yeah. When I masquerade as a math teacher in school sometimes, when I'm subbing in for teachers and, you know, doing the things that we do to make the school run. When I see students struggle, I see them struggle from adults not giving them clear directions in terms of like how to solve a problem. Right. And then also allowing for kids or affording them the opportunities to think outside of the box in terms of how they get to the answer. And so, you know, math is different than how we learned it. right? Like how they're teaching it now.
Correct.
Common Core, new strategies. Should we give away the? Should we stop and like leave back the old strategies, or should we incorporate both?
Good question. So a lot of folks, and all of us as parents out here in the field or older adults, we're like, we weren't taught this way. We need to go the old way. But look at society. Is the way we were taught really working for everybody in society? Do you remember all those formulas? Did you have an amazing math experience? So let's park there. You talked about the Common Core. Well, we have to understand Common Core is just a set of standards, y'all. We've always had a set of standards in math. Always. The pendulum has shifted, and we can talk about it another day why I keep shifting back and forth. But the question I want to challenge folks to, do you believe a child should have multiple ways to solve a problem? If you believe a child should have multiple ways to solve a problem, multiple opportunities, then you believe in this new math. Yeah. So get out of what you've seen on Facebook and the memes, this and that. The key is giving children problem-solving abilities. All of us as adults, no job has asked you to do a job one way or as to how well you can't do it. Every one of us is given the opportunity to showcase how do we do it. Now, are there some things you have to do step by step? Yes, but we've also evolved over time. Those steps have changed. We have to do the same thing in mathematics experiences for children to give them the opportunity to fall in love with math. Because every adult is going to say, most adults, you ask them, do you like math? Oh, I hate math. Oh, I say, but pause. You like math. You just may not like the context. What do you mean, Dr. Childs? If I ask you to add two fractions, you may not want to add two fractions because you're trying to figure out. But if I told you to find out what is 50% of your utility bill, you can figure that out. Oh, yeah, I can figure that out. You're doing math. If you know what the price of gas is, how much you need for 10 gallons, oh, you can do math. When your paycheck is short, all of us have figured out how to do math when your paycheck is wrong. So we like math. We love math. I don't like, and no one should like, the context is presented in as a static textbook when I'm just ripping out worksheet pages. Yeah, that's not math.
So remembering my own experience, in fifth grade, I had a bad math year. And the reason why I had a bad math year is because I had a bad math teacher, right? And so my thinking, based off of my own lived experience, is that if you have one bad math year, that could put you on a trajectory to just not, one, not love math anymore, and two, struggle, right? Because I know a couple of my buddies that also had bad math years in the fifth grade because of the teacher that we had, and we struggled mightily all the way through eighth grade because we didn't have those foundational skills. So what do you recommend to parents for students like me that have bad math years because they don't have the greatest math teacher? And like, how do we as parents like backfill those experiences?
So a couple of things we have to do as parents and families. Prime said this recently in a post, and it's going to connect. Prime said he never has a bad day. And I was like, that's a good, what do you mean? He started to say, I may have a bad moment. I may have a bad hour. But I never had a bad day because I made a switch. I want us as families to think through, yes, your child can have a bad math experience. Let's not make it a bad math career throughout school. Because, and I've challenged folks throughout this whole COVID piece, folks have been, we've heard it all, COVID slide, the reason children are not learning because of COVID, how are we going to fill it in? I said, I want to challenge us as an educational community, including families. If a child had one or two rough years during COVID, let's say third and fourth grade. Mm-hmm. Fair enough. Mm-hmm. It was different for all of us, this online piece.
Yeah.
Is our school system so bad that two grades, third and fourth, are bad when they get to 12th grade, they still don't know math? If that is so, that is not the child's fault. That is not the family's fault. That is the system's fault.
Yes.
Are we creating a system where folks have an opportunity? Now, I get it. I cannot stand a bad math experience. I'm in schools all the time. But I'm also pushing the system to say, okay, statistically, a child is going to have a bad experience.
Yeah.
How do we make sure it's not, as Prime say, a day or a career, but it's literally just a moment in time. It was bad in third, but we got together in fourth. And that's why, honestly, and again, I'm a proponent of Common Core standards. The standards are built upon a progression where if you have a bad moment, you can still build and fill upon the gaps over the course of time. And when I challenge families, don't let this broad-based, every school person can reach out to me. Stop letting these schools put your child in these intervention programs or remedial programs
They
never can get out of.
Yes, sir.
Parents, you're probably like, families, what do you mean? Like, my child needs help. I know they need help. But if core math instruction is happening, or core anything, and they're pulling your child out to get remediation, when do they get the core? Think about that for a minute. Yes, they if they need some, they need both. Like, let me, I'm calm down. I'm getting
hey, you know how we do. Hey, listen, but so you put me in a moment right here, right? Because when you think about it, and you think about tier three intervention, right? Everybody should know what tier three intervention is if you're an educator, because this is a show that's dedicated for math people. How do you get a kid out of tier three math purgatory?
There's no graduation. There is no graduation for remediation and interventions. None. We have all these ways to get in and very few ways to get out.
Yeah.
And what is happening, families, when folks put your child in a remediation and an intervention, they're essentially putting your child on a track out of life, of a quality and standard of life. They're not going to get to honors classes. They're not going to be gifted. They're not going to get to AP classes. And then when it's time to graduate, guess what? They're not going to be ready to go to a high-potential college.
Yeah.
So you're letting early grades, we do this crap at the elementary level screeners and testing to place them. And a kid is screwed the remainder of their life, as opposed to rethinking, give them a grade level material and fill in the gaps along the way.
Listen, I've seen it firsthand. When you got these kids that are going into college and they got to take remedial math. And so now they are spending money to take a 3-credit class that don't even count towards anything, doesn't count towards graduation, all because they didn't have a good math experience.
And I worked in higher ed. I call it higher ed. You're bringing children in to pay top dollar for a year, a half a year of remediation. And then knowing statistically, it is almost impossible for that child to graduate from your school. So essentially, you're taking them into your school knowing statistically it's going to be almost impossible for them to make it just to take their money.
Well, you know,
it's a complicit system. And we can do better as adults to say, hey, you need some remediation. We're going to partner with the community college. It's a lesser price. Let you all get the remediation. Yeah. Then we're going to bring you in because we want you to be successful.
Yeah, because folks like you, PhDs that are teaching math or whatever on a higher ed level, man, you're not trying to. You're not. Your office hours are not going to be dedicated to tutoring folks. It's either you got it or you don't.
And you oftentimes not even equipped to do remediation. Again, we have to be honest with the system that we all contributed in, and we need to start making changes for the better.
Yeah. So based off of your experience and seeing students struggle, when you see the majority of students struggling with math, what are the concepts that they're struggling in, and what strategies do you have for that?
So one of the ones most struggling, fractions. That's across the board, fractions. Then when we get up to the upper grades, two equations, two unknowns, those pieces. But the key is, how do we solve a lot of these things in the elementary levels and elementary teaching? I'm not blaming you all. I'm just saying, laying the foundation. I'm going to talk about middle school and high in a minute. We have to allow children to use manipulatives.
Yeah.
We have to let them use. When you think about a child's learning, it starts with concrete, representational. Then we get to the abstract. We too often don't allow children to use manipulatives. Those are your base 10 blocks, your pattern blocks, different things that they need to make sense of the math and then make natural connections, which is going to help them when they get to middle school. They can engage in algebra tiles. They can see how the math makes sense. We're so focused on how do we get to the answer. And then this is my favorite manipulative. We have children.
Don't cost nothing.
Doing this.
Yeah.
Don't use fingers. Look, this is a manipulative that was given to you, God made manipulative. It was given to you for a reason.
Yeah.
Stop making children. I know adults use their fingers. What is wrong with using your fingers? You have these tools. We're not harnessing the power. Then a lot of you are going to say, well, Chris, when they get to the test, the state test, they can't use a lot of these things. So my question is, as an adult, and I blame adults all the time.
Yeah.
What are you doing to change the state test? You're telling me a child can solve the problem with manipulatives, do well with manipulatives. And then when they get to the test, they don't do well. It's because the test wasn't designed for them. You know it, and you're still pushing this. What are you doing to say, hey, put up manipulatives so students can take the test? There are people ripping apart this time of the year towards the end of school. People are clearing out their rooms. Hey, we can't have this because they're taking the test. We can't have this. So all year they've had number lines, they've had word walls, and they're taking the test. They can't have none of it. What you mean? And then you blame the black and brown children code. They can't learn. Or these kids don't have tools that they can't learn. No, your system cannot properly educate them to give them what they need.
Yeah, you said a whole mouthful right there. So we use Japanese math at our school, heavily based off of that manipulative model that you were talking about. Just recently saw you had a viral tweet with regards to you challenging the system with manipulatives. Where did that derive? Also saw somebody jump in your feed, and you invited yourself to their school. Talk to me about just the thought process behind that.
So there's a couple of things. One is just literally working with children on a daily basis and seeing how they learn and how they can do well with manipulatives. And we keep shunning them as opposed to open that piece. And then on social media, I put out a lot of things, but I'm the type, I tell people quick to pull up. I don't like social media because a lot of people, I won't say names, I'd be nice today, but a lot of people post stuff on social media not really about their life. A lot of people we respect in education post a lot of this stuff on social media, and we get in meeting rooms to have these real discussions. Let's put manipulatives on tests, let's do these things. They're quiet as a mouse. Oh, wow. So my thing is, you're not going to tell me one thing. I'm willing to pull up. Yeah. I'm willing to fly to your place and pull up because it's not for vanity metrics. But my thing is, everything I say and do, I stand on that. Mm-hmm. If you don't, and people say, I don't believe that, you know, quit. You out the classroom, I will come to your classroom and do it. I stand on what I believe in because not because I've heard about it, because I do it. So my thing is, what are we doing to make it better and easier for children? And then my educators, most educators love me. Why? Because I support them. Yeah. And I support high quality educators that are trying to engage and trying to do better. But if you do good, I'm going to call you out. I'm going to shout you out. If you do bad, I'm going
to
call you out.
Got to.
Because these children, like somebody the other day said, Chris, so intense. I was like, man, I don't care about none of this, though. I care about these children. At the end of the day, I don't care about none of this. What am I doing to make sure these children have a better life? And the zip code and their race ethnicity does not determine their academic outcome.
Absolutely doesn't. All right, so let me ask you this, right? Because you know some district folks, they follow me and they listen to these podcasts as well. And so those are the people, them and school board members, those are the folks that are selecting math curriculum in order to educate kids, right? So like, what is the thought process for those folks that should go into the selection of a math curriculum?
I'm going to say something to ruffle a lot of people's feathers. Yeah. Why do y'all keep purchasing curriculum and you're not seeing gains across the board? Yes, Jay-Z said it best. You in New York, men lie, women lie, numbers don't. We keep purchasing products that we has, and beyond efficacy says, I won't even go that deep, beyond just seeing does it work.
Yeah.
Then what y'all need to be challenged, your purchasers, why are you letting people sell you at the same time? And I've been on both sides. Hey, we have a math program and we know children are behind. So we're going to sell you a math intervention to go with it.
Yes, sir.
So what you're telling me as a publisher, when you sell me both, your core program really doesn't work because you got to have an intervention. And they're going to bill it as, oh, no, you don't have. Because if your core program is good, you have things built within it where any child can access the math at grade level. So as you're on these committees and having these conversations, stop asking weak questions. Oh, my gosh. Does it have color pages? Can we rip them out? Ask them the questions. Show me the data where this works. Yeah. And also, I would make contracts that say, hey, I'm going to sign a contract. If this doesn't work, I want you to tell me how long do I need to see get roping gains?
Yes.
3 years. Cool. In 3 years, I'm coming to get my money back. If I don't see, I don't want to hear, you got to implement it with fidelity. No. If in 3 years, this does not work, I want my money back.
Yeah.
This is how you push an industry. And I work in the publishing world. And I tell my team, like, stand on what we do. Make sure it's good because I know it works. But the same thing we got to do with these other folks. And then, again, you all keep complaining about publishers and still spend all this money and don't hold them accountable.
Yeah.
And that's you as adults and leaders. All right, let me be quiet because my publishing friends gonna start calling me. Hey, y'all know I'm in the publishing world. So guess what? I put the onus on us because we can constantly do better by who? Children.
So, but let me ask you this though, right? Now, it's one thing for you to create a good product, but then the second component to a good product is implementation, right? And so if you are talking to school leaders right now about professional development and how math professional development should look, what's your advice to school leaders?
It has to be a package, y'all. You can't purchase the car oftentimes we treat buying curriculum like buying a car. All of us have purchased a car. The salesperson is all in, the best friend. You get the car the first week. Hey, how you love the car? You need anything? After about the second, third week, you never hear from again until it's time to buy a new car.
Facts.
That does not work. We can't keep doing curriculum purchases like that. We have to, when you're partnering with it, you develop a partnership with these publishers.
Of course.
There should be a conversation, not how do we get started, but I need professional learning that is intertwined with it to help my teachers grow along the way. So in year two, what does professional learning look like? Year three, what does professional learning look like? And it should be an intertwined plan.
Yeah.
So that way it's a partnership. As you're finding maybe an error in the program, a question, you're partnering with the publisher to make those corrections for your district. Stop just buying stuff and saying, oh, we do it on our own. This should be a relationship. If we care about children who are using this, we care about the teachers and making sure they have what they need.
Yeah.
It is 2023. We got access to everything, all this technology, and we still don't make sure every teacher has a high quality curriculum. And we don't make sure they actually know how to use that curriculum. It's 2023, y'all. We got to stop making excuses and intertwine those two. Professional learning locks up with the curriculum that you've purchased.
Love that, man. I appreciate you blessing these math teachers because this is so needed. This conversation is needed. Oh, I can't even, man. So I guess coming down to the end, what's your thoughts on teacher-made assessments, on math teacher-made assessments, and then what's your thoughts on standardized tests? So twofold.
I'm laughing because my community know how I feel about teacher paid things.
Yeah.
This is my piece, y'all. Why and not why? When do you have time to do all this stuff? When do you have time to create curriculum materials? When do you have time to create more assessments? When do you have time? We have to start being smarter in what we're doing. And there are high quality materials that are openly accessible for anybody to access. Why aren't we using those pieces and focusing and spending that same time and energy on differentiation, same time and energy on engagement, as opposed to I got to create it myself?
Yeah.
Again, you don't have time. And be honest, not even time during the school day. Your families need you just as much as these children need you in schools.
Yes, sir.
We as the education community have to start working smarter in this whole piece of teacher created materials. And then a lot of stuff online is crap. That's being created. If you don't have the data to show it's working, why do we keep using it? Yeah. And I don't want to hear, well, Johnny back in 1984 did well with this. It's 2023. As a whole, how are folks doing? Now, your other question was standardized assessments. My question is, what are we assessing? And why are we assessing it? And who are we assessing it for? And if we really want to be real, who's making all this money from these assessments?
Yeah.
The game is really big picture, and a lot of these companies are doing this.
Yeah,
I make the standardized assessment. I know children are not going to perform well because I don't even have half the tools they need. Yeah. But guess what? They're not going to do well, but I also got an intervention to sell you after they don't do well in the assessment. Wow. We have to ask ourselves, what is the purpose of education? Is it to assess children, or is the purpose of education to prepare them for life beyond school?
Yeah.
If the purpose is to prepare them for life beyond school, they do not need to memorize 20 facts. Yeah. Do they need to know how to do problem solving? Do they need to know how to do a project? Yes. Do they need to know how to comprehend and make sense of things that they're reading? Yes. We have to be as adults to start to push back on this. And does that mean, he's talking about dumbing down schools? I'm not talking about dumbing down schools because when I look at a lot of data in a lot of schools, it's already there. So I'm not talking about dumbing it down. What I am talking about is making sure every child, when they graduate, has an opportunity for success that is, again, not dictated by their race, ethnicity, or their zip code.
Yeah.
So it's time to really think. Do we need forms of assessment to see how students are growing? Yes. They need to match the experiences that they're going through. We can't keep stripping all these things out down the wall and then saying assessing and wonder why they're not doing well. We can't keep making assessments that were not designed with all children in mind, but a certain subset of children who keep doing well, by the way, knowing other children don't have access. We can't keep designing assessments when we know we don't have it in different languages that are translatable. And we have all these students who are multilingual. So all year they're getting services on assessment is English only. But we're saying, the multilinguals can't learn. We can't keep having assessments when children who are from low socioeconomic situations, who don't have access to the calculators, who don't have access to all the resources around them, when I say tutors and different things, they're not performing well. It ain't the child, y'all. I can't keep giving assessments where black and brown children don't even see themselves in the images, but you put images in there. So intentionally you put somebody in there, but you can put a couple black and brown children in there, but they can't learn. They can't do these things. We have to be willing to recreate something different. And that means a lot of you all as leaders making these decisions need to partner with others, or it may be time to step aside to give others the opportunity. Again, if you care about children. If you don't care about children, keep doing what you're doing. We keep getting the same thing we keep getting, and you'll be happy with a lot of y'all.
Man.
I didn't be quiet before I get
no, you ain't got to be quiet. Yeah. Hey, listen, we're putting you in final thoughts right now, putting the screen on you, final thoughts on what you want folks to know about math.
So first, I want to thank the opportunity to be on this amazing show just to have a conversation. Educators, you know I love you. I'm going to support you because the ones that are doing right by children, we're going to keep doing. The ones that are not doing right by children, hey, it's other career paths. There's nothing wrong with it. We have to do right by children. And I've been saying children throughout this podcast. Why do I say children? Because that's what they are. I don't care if you're in 12th grade. I don't care if you're in 8th grade. I don't care if you're in kindergarten. You're someone's child. You're someone's, they're someone's love and joy. We have to look at them through the eyes of a child and not just a formal eye of a student. So educators, that's what I want. And then for children, I'm going to keep fighting on your behalf. You just keep showing up. All of you children show up every day. It's 53 million children in our school system, and they're still showing up, majority of them, in our public schools every day. And so people can't keep saying the children don't care. They don't want, they care. The families care. The society cares. But what are we doing to fight for better educational experiences? And I keep saying adults because we're the ones that create these experiences. We're the ones that have an opportunity to change society for a better. But it starts with making sure every child, regardless of their race, ethnicity, regardless of their socioeconomic status, has a high quality educational experience. We have the ability to transform children's lives. We have the ability to transform communities if we do what we need to do. Last thing, I'll leave you with this. Why is this important? Why does this matter? Largely in the U.S., the zip codes determine the quality of life around that zip code because it funds city, different components within the city. It also funds our schools. Think about this. If a child gets tracked out of society in their lower grades, and in middle school, they're in the remediation classes, in high school, they may or may not graduate, what do you think that child is going to end up living? What opportunities will that child have if they barely get a diploma, if a diploma at all? And what happens? They're going to be in a still a low socioeconomic status. Their children are going to repeat. And that's the part of the city you always tell people don't go to. Be careful over there. Why? The system was designed to create and keep them in that impoverished situation. We can use education as a piece where, hey, we're not going to put you on the low track, regardless of your zip code. We're going to give you all a high quality experience. Why? So when you graduate, even if you're from a community that is impoverished, you're going to have something that you can give back to change your community. We're going to give you the tools needed that you can go be a politician. You could be a leader to change all communities for the better. If we care about equitable society, if we care about all children, those are things that we're pushing for. And that is why it starts with making sure we have every child receiving a high quality education, every educator getting everything they need and beyond to make sure every child gets a high quality education. This is what we got to do as educators, y'all.
Yes, sir. How can they find you on socials?
Find me on social, all social media platforms at DRKCHILDS, at DRKChilds. Hit me up. Hey, if you engage with me on social, I bring that thunder. Why? That's why I do on and off the camera. If you catch me face to face, it's the same level of energy. I'm not one of those social media warriors that tweets and goes home. Every day I'm going hard in the paint for children. So you find me on social media, DRKChilds. Check me on my website, www.christopherchilds.com. Hey, I do professional learning. I do speaking. I do all that jazz. If you need me, I'm there for you. But most importantly, whatever you need, I got you. This is your favorite educator, Dr. Christopher Childs. I appreciate you letting me be on your show today.